Welcome to Zichron Daf Sim Money Memory by Avram Goldar, and today we're Zechar Shabbos Daf Pei Beis. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Gemara brings a number of opinions regarding what one should do if he needs to relieve himself but is unable to do so. Rav Chissa said he should stand up and sit down, stand up and sit down. Rav Chanan of Nardar said he should move himself to the sides. Rashi explains that he should move to another spot before trying a second time. Rav Amnuna said he should manipulate himself in that place with a stone. And the Rabban said he should remove his mind from it. And Rav Ashi explained that the Rabban meant he should remove his mind from all other matters and concentrate fully on relieving himself. Point number two, there's a machlokes between Rav Chisda and Ravina concerning one who does not relieve himself when he needs to. One holds that he will develop bad breath. Rashi explains that the waste not excreted will rot and the resulting odor will exit through the mouth. The other one holds he will develop bad body odor. Rashi explains that the rotting waste will be absorbed in his tissues, causing excessive foul perspiration. And point number three, in the opening mission, the ninth parak, that deals with the rabbinic enactment that Avodah Zorah transmits tuma, Rabbi Akiva states that Avodah Zorah transmits tuma through tuma's masa, carrying it, just like Anita does, based on the comparison of the two in the pasuk, Tizrem kamo davat, say tomer lo, you will cast them away as you would Anita, you will say to the Avodah Zorah, go out. Gemara brings a mission from Avodah Zorah, where the Rabban disagree with Rabbi Akiva and state that Avodah Zorah generates tuma like a sheretz, based on the pasuk that refers to an idol, shaketz to shaksenu. You must utterly abominate it. The word sheketz is related to the word sheretz, and therefore the pasuk teaches that just as a sheretz doesn't generate tumas masa, a caring tuma, neither does avodah zorah. There's a machlokes amoraim on how to understand this dispute. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The Gemara brings a number of opinions regarding what one should do if he needs to relieve himself but is unable to do so. Rav Chisda said he should stand up and sit down, stand up and sit down. Rav Chanan and Nardah said he should remove himself to the sides. Rashi explains he should move to another spot before trying a second time. Rav Hamnuna said he should manipulate himself in that place with a stone. And the Rabban said he should remove his mind from it. Rav Ashi explained that the Rabban meant he should remove his mind from all other matters and concentrate fully on relieving himself. Point number two, there's machlokes between Rav Chisda and Ravina concerning one who does not relieve himself when he needs to. One holds he'll develop bad breath. Rashi explains that the waste not excreted will rot and the resulting odor will exit through the mouth. The other one holds he'll develop bad body odor. And Rashi explains that the rotting waste will be absorbed in his tissues, causing excessive foul perspiration. And point number three, in the opening mission of the ninth parak that deals with the rabbinic enactment that Avodah Zorah transmits tuma, Rekiva states that Avodah Zorah transmits tuma's masa, tuma, through carrying it, just like Anita does, based on the comparison of the two. In the pasuk, Tizrem kamo davad, say tomer lo, you will cast them away as you would Anita, you'll say to the Avodah Zorah, go out. The Gemara brings a mishnah from Avodah Zorah, where the Rabban disagree with Rabbi Akiva. And they state that the Avodah Zorah generates tumah like a sheretz, based on the pasuk that refers to an idol, shaketz to shaksenu, you must utterly abominate it. The word sheketz is related to the word sheretz, and therefore the pasuk teaches that just as a sheretz does not generate tumas masa, the caring form of tumah, neither does Avodah Zorah. And there's a machlokes amoraim on how to understand this dispute. All right, so now we go to a simcha for Pei Beis, and by far the number one selection was pub, Irish pub, English pub, bartender, beer. Number two was pebbles, lots of pebbles. We had fruity pebbles, the cereal. And then we had peanut butter came in also with strong number three choice. I just want to point out someone here suggested our resident scientist, Dr. David, a lead pipe because the element lead is PB on the periodic table. And then someone else suggested Pablo Picasso. And then in parentheses, not to be confused with Pasek Picasso. But we're going to go with pub for Pei Beis. Thank you everybody for all your suggestions. But the symbol for Pei Beis is going to be pub. So here goes. The pub, famous for serving its patrons beer, that gave them stomach cramps, which reminds us that Gemara brings a number of opinions regarding what one should do if he needs to relieve himself, but is unable to do so. Rav Chisda said he should stand up and sit down, stand up and sit down. Rav Chanan Nardah said he should remove himself to the sides. Rashi explains that he should move to another spot before trying a second time. Rav Hamnuna said he should manipulate himself in that place with a stone. And the Rabban said he should remove his mind from it. And Rav Ashi explained that the Rabban meant he should remove his mind from all other matters and concentrate fully on relieving himself. So the pub, famous for serving his patrons beer, that gave them stomach cramps, as well as bad breath and body odor, which reminds us of this machlokes between Rav Chisda and Ravina concerning one who does not relieve himself when he needs to. One holds he will develop bad breath. Rashi explains that the waste not excreted will rot and the resulting odor will exit through the mouth. The other one holds he will develop bad body odor. Rashi explains that the rotting waste will be absorbed in his tissues, causing excessive foul perspiration. So the pub, famous for serving his patrons beer that gave him stomach cramps, as well as bad breath and body odor, was fittingly called the tummy idol. Which reminds us, in the opening mission of the ninth parak that deals with the rabbinic enactment that Avodah Zorah transmits tumah, Rabbi Akiva states that a Avodah Zarah transmits Tumah through Tumas Masa, carrying it, just like Anita does, based on the comparison of the two. In the Pasuk, Tizrem Kamo Davad, say Tomer Lo. You will cast them away as you would Anita. You will say to it, meaning the idol, go out. The Gemara brings a Mishnah from Avodah Zarah where the Rabban disagree with Rabbi Akiva and state that Avodah Zarah generates Tumah like a Sheretz, based on the Pasuk that refers to an idol, Shaketz de Shaksenu. You must utterly abominate it. The word Shaketz is related to the word Sheretz, and therefore, the Pasuk teaches that just as a Sheretz does not generate Tumas Masa, a caring Tumah, neither does Avodah Zarah, and there's a Malchokas Amarayim on how to understand this dispute. So once again, the pub, famous for serving his patrons beer that gave them stomach cramps, as well as bad breath and body odor, was fittingly called the Tummy Idol. All right, so now it's time for Four Ba Ba'a Chazara. Daf Ein Ches. So the Simfra Ein Ches is a child going, ugh. So here goes. The child went, ugh, ugh. That means run Daf Ein Ches. The child went, ugh, as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey, which reminds us, Abai stated the following rule for determining the shear of a substance that one is liable for carrying if that substance has more than one use. Any substance that has two uses, one common and one not common, the Rabbanim follow the common use to determine the minimum shear for liability, even if this results in a leniency. For example, wine's common use is for drinking, while its use for healing is uncommon. The Rabbanim therefore followed its use for drinking, which is a large measure, even though this results in a kula, in a leniency. Any substance that has two uses, both of which are common, the Rabbanim follow the common use that results in a stringency. For example, honey is used both for eating as well as for healing. So the Rabbanim follow its use for healing, even though it results in a stringency, since a smaller amount of honey is required for healing purposes. So the child went, ugh, as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, which reminds us, the next Mishnah continues to identify the minimum shear for various substances, including this list, are paper, enough to write a tax collector's receipt, a kashrut mochsin, a raised paper, enough to wrap around the mouth of a small flask of balsam oil, hide, or enough to make a kameya, parchment, enough to write the smallest parchment of tefillin, which is Shema Yisrael. So the child went, ugh, as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, when all of a sudden there was a knock on the door, and it was the tax collector's runner. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Brisa that according to the Tanna Kamma, one is only liable for carrying a tax collector's receipt, a kesher moksin, if he has not yet shown it to the tax collector. Once he has, it no longer has a use, and therefore one is no longer liable for carrying it. Reb Yudah holds that he's still liable since he has a need for it. There's machlokes about what Reb Yudah meant that he has a need for it. Abai says he will retain the receipt in case the tax collector sends runners after him, the check of his taxes are paid. If he couldn't prove he paid, he'd be brought back to the official to be cleared. Reb Yudah holds that he would keep the receipt to avoid this. Rav and Rav Ashi bring alternative pshatim. Daf Ein Tes. So the Simfra Ein Tes is an 8, a pen. We think of a scribe, a silver with a quill. So here goes. The rookie scribe took his quill. Scribe taking his quill, that means run Daf Ein Tes. The rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide the size of a kameya, which reminds us, Rav Nachman told Rav that unprocessed hide has the same minimum shear to be liable for carrying as processed hide, which is the amount to make a kameya. He brings a proof from a Mishnah later on that teaches that the minimum shear from a laban, whitening wool, menapates, disentangling it, and saveya, dyeing, is the same shear for tova, spinning the thread, since the raw wool stands to be spun into thread. So here too, in the case of unprocessed hide, its shear is the same shear as tanned hide, since it stands to be tanned. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing an unprocessed hide the size of a kameya, when all of a sudden he realized his hands were tummy from touching his tefillin scrolls, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa regarding which parts of the tefillin render one's hands tamei when touched, in keeping with one of the 18 enactments learned earlier on. The Tanna Kamma says the straps of the tefillin make one's hands tamei when they're attached to the tefillin. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Shimon, touching the katsitsa, the leather boxes, render one's hands tamei. And Rabbi Zakkai says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, one's hands only become tamei if they touch the mezuzah, the scroll of the tefillin itself. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide, the size of a kameya. When all of a sudden he realized his hands were tamei from touching his tefillin scrolls that were written on cloth. Which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa that it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that tefillin must be written on cloth, which is the outer layer of the hide, and a mezuzah must be written on duchsustos, which is the inner layer of the hide. When one writes on the cloth, he must write on the side of the cloth that originally faced the flesh of the animal, and when writing on duchsustos, he must write on the side that originally faced the hair of the animal. This brisa was brought as one of the many challenges to Rav, who said that tefillin may also be written on duchsustos. The Gemara deflects the challenge by saying that the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai may be only stating how to fulfill the mitzvah of writing tefillin in the best way possible, However, tefillin written on duchsusus may still be kosher. Daf pei. So the sim for daf pei is payday, and I'm going to do some sim surgery here. I'm going to take out the buying himself a newfangled write on suit, and instead change it to he bought himself some quick drying ink, because that's the ikker part of the sugi here. So here goes. It's going to be like this. On payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself some quick drying ink, as well as a bag of half fig sized foods to snack on while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. So once again, on payday, that means run daf pay. On payday, the painter put out some cash and bought himself some quick drying ink, which reminds us, the Mishnah says that one is liable for carrying ink in Rishus HaRabim if it's the amount that two letters can be written with. Rava said if one took out enough ink that one can write two letters with it, but instead of placing the ink down in Rishus HaRabim, he wrote two letters in Rishus HaRabim while he was walking, for example, on a piece of paper or his clothes, he's liable for the transfer. The ksiva, the writing, is considered the hanacha, the placing down of the ink. But if he took out enough ink to write one letter and wrote a letter, and then took out another amount of ink for one letter and wrote a letter, he's exempt, because the two half measures do not combine. And the reason is that at the time he took out the last letter, the first letter had already begun to dry and decrease in volume. Therefore, the two letters no longer combine to form a full measure. So on payday, the painter put out some cash and bought himself some quick drying ink, as well as a bag of half fig sized foods to snack on, which reminds us, it says in the Mishnah early on Dav Ein Vavim Beis, the one is liable for carrying food out into Rishus HaRabim if it's the amount of a grogeris, a dried fig. It was taught in a braisa that if one took out the equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, half a dried fig, and then he went back inside and took out another equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, and he did so behelam echad in one lapse of awareness, then he's liable for one chatas offering. However, if he did them b'shtei halamos, in two separate periods of unawareness, then they do not combine, and he is putter. Rav Yossi says that even if the two acts were carried out in the same lapse of awareness, he's only liable if he took them out to the same rishus. But if he took them out into two separate rishus or rabbims, the two half measures do not combine, and he's exempt from bringing chatas. So on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself some quick drying ink, as well as a bag of half fig sized foods to snack on, while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Braisa that after the Churban, the Rabbanim forbade one from plastering his house with lime unless he mixed straw or sand into the plaster. Rashi explains that mixing the straw or sand into the plaster would darken the lime, which would be a sign of mourning of Avelas for Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yehuda says that mixing in straw is permitted, but sand is prohibited because it strengthens the plaster, which offsets the detrimental loss of its whiteness. Daf payoff. So the simmer daf payoff is a grandpa. So here goes. The grandpa, that means we're on daf payoff. The grandpa took a special set of three rocks, which reminds us. The Gemara relates that when Zonin came to the Beis Midrash, he asked, which size stones are used for wiping oneself after going to the bathroom? Rashi explains that knowing these sizes will determine the size that's forbidden to carry on Shabbos, since they have a use. It will also determine the size of stones that one may carry out in his courtyard and not be concerned with muksa, being that they're set aside to use. They answer that one takes out three stones, the first the size of an olive, the second the size of a nut, and the third the size of an egg. Zoni was surprised and asked if one's expected to bring in a scale to the bathroom to weigh the stones. So after some discussion, they concluded that the measure of stones is a handful, regardless of size or number. And the Gemara brings additional opinions regarding which stones are used. So the grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity, which reminds Rabbi Rav Shila asked Rav Chisda what the halacha was concerning whether one is permitted to carry the stones with him to his roof if he wishes to relieve himself there. Rashi explains that Rabbi Rav Shila was asking if it should be prohibited because of tirchi yisersa, extra exertion. Rav Chisda answered, "Gadol kavod abriya shadoiches lo saseh shebatorah. Human dignity is so great that it even suspends the Torah prohibition." Rashi explains that just as the Torah permits a Talmud Chacham to not pick up lost objects that are below his dignity, despite the Torah prohibition to not ignore returning lost objects, so too here one is allowed to take the stones up to the roof to preserve human dignity. Even though muksa is a rabbinic prohibition, it's rooted in the Torah prohibition of Losasur to not deviate from the words of the sages. So the grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity after his grandkins convinced him there was a problem of going in a freshly plowed field with regards to the malacha of plowing. Which reminds us, Rav Huna said it's forbidden for one to relieve himself in a freshly plowed field on Shabbos out of concern that the person will take a stone from the ridge of a furrow and after using it will throw it inside and through flattening out the field, he'll be liable for a toldah of plowing. Rashi explains that when one levels a furrow in a field, it's considered the malacha plowing because he's preparing the ground for planting. All right, now it's time to conclude with a pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here goes number 1. Which daf do we discuss? Which part of the tefillin is metame, one's hands? That's on daf. Ein test. Good. Number two. Which daf do we have a machlokes if there's a use for a kesher mochsin, a tax collector's receipt? That's on daf. Ein ches. Great. Number three. Which daf do we learn that according to one who does not relieve himself, it will lead to bad breath? That's on daf. Pei beis. Good. Number four. Which daf do we discuss trapping and squeezing a chilazon and whether psia beklal disha? That's on daf. Ein hey. Great. Number five. Which daf do we learn that tefillin is written on klef and a mezuzah is written on dechzustus? That's on daf. Ein test. Great. Number six. Which daf do we discuss how many stones are used for wiping? That's on daf. Pay off. Good. Number seven. Which daf do we have a machlokas whether a chila al yedei adchak is considered a chila? That's on daf. Ein vav. Great. Number eight. Which daf do we have different techniques that one can use to relieve oneself if he's having trouble doing so? That's on daf. Pei beis. Good. Number nine. Which daf do we discuss congealed wine and blood into a kazayas? That's on daf. Ein zayin. Great. Number 10. Which daf do we learn that one should not relieve himself in a freshly plowed field because of the malacha of choresh, of plowing? That's on daf. Pay off. Great. And now the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachas. Number one. Which daf do we discuss who is greater, Bali Tshuva or Tzadikim Gemurim? That's on daf. Lamed Dalet. Good. Number two. Which daf do we learn what the brachas of the Shmona Esrei correspond to? That's on daf. Chav Ches. Good. And number three. Which daf do we discuss if the dead are aware of what's happening in Olam Hazeh? That's on daf. Yud Ches. Excellent. That concludes our pop quiz. Plus the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachas. This is Rabbi Avram Gold from Zichru. Wishing you a great day and great learning.